Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just 15 bucks a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to Made by Mamas, the podcast. I'm Zoe.
And I'm Georgia.
And we're here talking all things parenthood. You know, the real conversations.
Tips and tricks.
Products we love.
And brands we can't live without.
Let's get into it. Georgia?
Georgia!
It's just me. Hi guys, Georgia has gone on holiday to Abu Dhabi and she's left me and she's currently off my Christmas card list because who goes on holiday, hey? No, she really needed the break. So it's just me today. It's so lovely to have you listening to Tuesday's episode of the podcast. I am finally out of kind of chicken pox and illness hell. And we had a really lovely weekend kind of going to friends' barbecues and hanging out. A little bit of sunshine on the Saturday too. So feeling refreshed and ready to go. And I'm also covering JK and Kelly Brook for the next 2 weeks on Drive Time, which is lovely. Lots of time with the kids in the morning because obviously it's half term. And then I get to come into London and do a little bit of work. All is good in the Doran Jones household. So we're going to get into the chat today. I took it solo, obviously, because G's away. I've known this person for about 15 years, which I think really helped us actually have that really nice rapport during the conversation. And it's another male voice on the podcast for this week, which is brilliant. He's just made a massive announcement in the press over the last 3 weeks. And you will recognise him instantly from his voice. And you've probably known him to be on our screens for what? Just over 20 years, I think now. So a very exciting conversation, a very interesting conversation all around surrogacy today, but also kind of, you know, upbringing and, you know, the relationship that he has with his sisters and family. And obviously talking about the big, big thing that's going on in his life at the moment, which is the fact that he's about to be a father for the very first time. Today, we are saying hello and welcoming Brian Dowling to the podcast. Okay, so I'm very, very, very excited about today's chat because it's actually somebody that I've known for, we're just trying to work it out, but I reckon it's about 15 years. We've got a very good mutual friend in common. So we've presented some of the, I might say, most disastrous late night game shows on a certain channel, but we've moved on from that now. This particular man rose to fame in 2001, winning the second series of Big Brother. He made such an impact. He's then gone on to present countless shows on the TV. He's now residing in Ireland with his wonderful husband, Arthur, and he announced about 3 weeks ago that he was going to become a father for the first time via surrogate. We cannot wait to chat to you today. Please welcome Brian Dowling to the podcast.
When you were saying everything, I was like, she's actually correct. That is very accurate. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, done my research.
Yes,
done my
you've research. Done your research. Goodness, the shows we used to work on, I remember a certain show I was on and we had to get it started at midnight on ITV1 and it wrapped till 4 a.m. and the set was in Maidstone and I lived in Clapham at the time. And I remember just been thinking, what on earth? And there was no script. It was unscripted. It was very interactive. And I signed up to do 6 weeks of this show. And then they signed me up to do a whole year of it. And I remember, and you were doing something quite similar. Yours was a dating aspect. Yours was more fun, if I remember thinking. Yours was dating, right? With Brenda Courtney, Kat Shub.
Yes. So it was called, I want to say Play Date. And it was, I always say that it was really ahead of its time.
Because it was,
you'd
I
have
suppose.
People in the studio, singletons, and then people would watch these people from home and then they would each have a phone next to them and then they'd call up and they'd almost try to date them on camera.
Sounds a little seedy now. It sounds a bit Babe Station. It does sound a bit XXX.
It wasn't.
I know. It just sounds it. Oh, goodness.
One particular show that I did was being filmed. It was filmed in Manchester, very similar to the one that you're talking about. Completely unscripted. And it was the middle of the night and you'd have to stand there. We'd do an hour stint at a time. So an hour of live TV, then you'd go off, have a cup of tea, and then you'd come back on again. And it was like a word game. So I'd stand there and I'd be like, right, it's four letters, B-blank-L-L. And I'd go, right, Dave's on the phone. Hiya, Dave. What do you think it is? And he'd go, tree. And I go, it starts with a B, Dave. It starts with a B.
Yeah.
I mean,
I remember standing there and saying to people, we're looking for an animal. It's a three-letter word. It's not cat. The answer is not cat. We've Dolores from Croydon. Dolores, you've got one chance. Is it cat? It's not cat. And, you know, we didn't swear, even though it was the middle of the night. But I literally think stuff like that was great for me in everything I've done since then. If anything happens on a live show, and you will know this, if an auto cue breaks down, you've got extra time when you've no time. Because of the experience of being on live television, you know, on a really good channel that wasn't scripted, it's great. I learned so much from doing it.
Yeah. And you, I mean, your career, I kind of wanted to sort of take you back to 2001 when you actually entered the Big Brother house. I mean, it was what, 21 years ago now?
21 years ago last week since I entered, the 25th of May, 2001. Yes.
I mean, I reckon everybody listening to this podcast will have seen that series because it was just the time when reality telly was really having its moment. And you were a pinnacle person to that kind of generation, to that period of time and stuff. How do you look back on that experience? What comes to mind?
Just joy, pure happiness. I look back on the summer of 2001, you know, and I'm not a father just yet. So next summer will probably be the most memorable one of my life because I'll have a baby. But up until, you know, even I got married in 2015 and the summer of 2001, just Big Brother. And I remember the door shutting behind me. We were the last ones that walked in. It was me, I think Penny, and I think Paul Clark, and the door went, they even get goose pimples now. And just thinking, I had the best time. And not because I won the show, obviously that was the icing on the cake, but I just didn't have much drama on the show. It wasn't a controversial season of the show. You know, no one got warnings. I think it was when it was a social experiment and we were 10, 11 strangers living in a house doing the most basic things. We had one task a week. You know, one of them was to keep a fire lighting and one was to train a dog. And it was just so much fun. And I think I'm so glad I was 22 at the time because I was so naive. And I think I'm glad I didn't know anything about reality TV. You know, I was due to go back to work with Ryanair on the 1st of September. And I left the show on the 27th of July. And I really fully believed I was going to go back to work. I contacted them the week after I won and said, great, yeah, see you September 1st. Because I really didn't know what was going to happen. And I wasn't going on the show to fix myself. I'm not saying other people do. I wasn't going on the show in a sense to be someone because we only had the first season of the show and you kind of never knew what really happened to them, you know? Yeah. So it really was a social experiment and it was the best. Big Brother has given me the life I have, you know, my opportunities in London, being able to afford to buy my own home in London, being so young, the people I met that I'm still friends with. It's afforded me so much stuff.
Who are you still in contact with from the show?
No one.
You're not.
I swear, listen. And it's the same with Ultimate Big Brother. Not a person. No. So I'm thinking, is the problem me? I was recently in contact with Helen. And Helen Adams came second to me and we shared such a unique experience back in 2001. You know, the winner and the person coming second, Davina, was so, you know, so iconic. And we got in contact just recently. It was 20 years last summer. And we don't have each other's numbers, but we follow each other on social media. We DM, but really no one else. And I don't want to say it's through fault of anyone. I just think life moves on. And sometimes what I've learned, and I don't know if you're like this, I've learned in recent years the difference between friendship and the difference between being colleagues with some people. And I think both are okay. You know, sometimes I felt I had to be friends with people to work with them. You can have great chemistry with people on camera, whatever you're doing, but you don't have to be friends. You can just be really good colleagues.
Very true.
And I just think when I was on those shows at the time, yes, of course, we got on so well. But a real test of friendship is in the outside world with real life problems. Mm. And I don't think it's a bad thing. I'm not in contact with anyone and we don't hang out. I don't feel that any of us need to be hanging out. But, you know, this year is 21 years and I do think that's special. And it would be nice to see some people, you know, go for dinner. But also, you know, stuff are said over the years, you know, magazines, stuff online, people's, you know, idea of you. And, you know, so I just think there's also a lot of bullshit surrounding it as well. But I don't wish ill will on anyone at all.
How have you coped over the years with all of that kind of media attention? And you've just mentioned the magazines and the newspaper articles, and because it is a lot. And actually, yes, you know, now with the days of Instagram and Twitter, you know, we're so much more accessible and you know, you are in the firing line to receive comments and stuff. So what's your kind of go-to on that? How do you deal with it?
I have this thing where when I go to work, whether it's recording a podcast, a radio show, doing an endorsement, turning up and doing television or something, the clothes I wear are a uniform and it's me going to work. And a lot of clothes that I wear going to work, I wouldn't wear in my real life. So when I put on an outfit that's not really for me, like it's a work outfit, I'm going to work. And I just think it's a job and it's not real. Because back in the day of 2001, 2, 3, 4, 5, I remember just being on this wheel of just constantly and luckily working and working on amazing shows, having amazing opportunities, but having to go out 4 or 5 nights a week, having to get on a red carpet, having to get in the magazines, having to get in the papers. Nowadays, people go on their Instagrams. You can do it from home and you're in the papers. And we had to work those red carpets. When I was on SMTV Live with Tess, who's still a very good friend of mine, Tess Daly, we were photo shoot, magazine, out. You had to do it. And you kind of lose sense. I lost sense of who I was, I suppose, back then. And I think I became a caricature of what I thought people wanted, which was camp and loud. And then you would just kind of turn it on. And I suppose back then you had to work hard to get in the papers. You had to work hard to get in the magazines. Because if you weren't in, you know, the most popular club at the time, if you weren't on red carpet, you weren't in Now, Star, Heat, all of these, Sneak, all of these magazines.
Sneak magazine, wow.
Sneak,
that's
yes.
A blast from the past.
I'm telling
that
you,
one.
like that. Now I just think it's easier because I'm older and I'm wiser. And the press attention is, of course, lovely. Don't get me wrong, because it kind of strokes and feeds the ego. But it doesn't pay the bills. Of course it doesn't. No. So now that I'm older, I don't really I'm not, the whole press side of it just comes with it. Whereas before, I felt like I had to constantly do it. Since social media has been born, everything's just easier for people. Mm. But back in the day, Zoe, and you know this, we had to get our asses on red carpets. You had to do it, even if you didn't want to. You had to publicize the show that you were on and do all of those interviews and do everything.
Yeah.
And luckily, you know, when I arrived somewhere, it would make the tabloids, it would make the magazines. Then I was able to kind of work. But I took it very seriously back then. Whereas now, it's just part of the job, I suppose.
More of a comfort. There's more of a comfort now, I think. We know now we're sort of, I'm 40 this year and, you know, you just feel a bit more comfortable in your own skin, I guess, that actually, yeah, you have to play the game, but really, actually, you pick and choose the jobs that you want to do. You surround yourself with the people that you want to. And your next big chapter in your life is about to happen. Like, you're going to be a dad.
I know.
I'm so happy to be saying
Thank
this on
you.
The podcast. I think actually you are, apart from one other, the only person that we've had on that hasn't actually physically had the baby yet. So
no.
The first person that we're talking to that doesn't have baby in arms at the moment. So I want to talk to you. You mentioned, you know, about the stuff that was going on in your 20s, about how you had to be this kind of out there, this loud, this brash gay guy. You never spoke about the fact that you wanted to be a parent, to be a father. So when did that feeling kind of come about? And when did you realize, yeah, do you know what? Shit, I need to be a parent.
I always wanted to be a parent. I remember I brought my two younger sisters somewhere to Paris, Euro Disney. I was working at Ryanair at the time. I think I would have been no more than 20, 21, and they were super young. And I remember telling someone that I was their parent to get them on a ride. And I kind of thought, actually, do you know what? I would have probably had them at 10, you know, it didn't add up the age, but I kind of thought, actually, do you know what? I actually do want to be a dad. But then, you know, being gay, and you're going back in here to, you know, the 90s, I didn't think it was possible, you know, to be gay and then to be able to have children. I just didn't think it was possible. I kind of thought, now that I'm gay, you know, and I'm not going to have children. And then I obviously dated, you know, a few guys, and they didn't want to have family, so it was never really an issue. My sister had a baby at 16. You know, Chloe, my niece, she's 21 this year. That was amazing. And I kind of thought, oh my God, you know, I think, yeah, I still want to do it. And then it wasn't until I met Arthur in 2002 that we, you know, I'm from a very big family. I have six sisters. Arthur's got one sister, Nazik, and he said, I'd like to have a family. And I said, oh, so
you met Arthur
I.
in 2002?
Met him in Shadow Lounge. You've been to Shadow Lounge many a time. Yeah, she's nodding. I'm taking you back, Zoe. And 2002, we met on a night out. He didn't know I was in the public eye. He couldn't speak English. And then he was dancing on CDUK the following week. And of course, I was hosting SMTV Live with Tess. And Arthur was trying to go, what are you doing here? And I had to tell him, like, you know, worked in television, blah, blah, blah. But we broke up for 5 years. We broke up in 2006 and we got back together in 2011. And then I'd done a lot of self-discovering in those, you know, 5 years. And we got back together. I remember saying to him, if we're going to do this, you know, it's marriage, you know, it's family, let's get on the same page. And he said, absolutely. And then life happens. I was living in London. My mom passed away in 2018. We moved to America. Arthur was in America for kind of a year before me. We did the whole commute thing. He was working on a show over there, you know, and then it was in 2018 when mom passed away. I said to him, life is so short. We keep putting off something we want to do because I'm thinking, oh, we live in a two-bed flat. We can't have a baby in a flat. You know, we need to have a big home and I want to be in Ireland. I suppose we just kind of kept making excuses for ourselves. And then we knew people that had gone down the surrogacy route. And then Arthur didn't want to go down the surrogacy route. You know, he was an immigrant.
He didn't want to. No,
he didn't. You know, Arthur, you know, didn't have money. They were dressed by St. John's Ambulance. His father passed away. They moved to Belgium. You know, they had nothing. And he kind of thought, no, all of this money going down the surrogacy, let's kind of go down the adoption route. We were living in America at the time. We started the ball rolling, you know, surrogacy there, adoption there. I then moved back to Ireland.
It's legal. So just talk to us briefly about the surrogacy side of it. It's legal in America.
Yes.
But you can't pay a surrogate in the UK. You can pay for their expenses.
But also in Ireland, there are no regulations regarding surrogacy. So it's not that surrogacy is illegal in Ireland. It's also not legal. And we're having a domestic surrogacy. But that's only possible because my sister is our surrogate. And she lives in the same country as me. So she's a domestic surrogacy. And also about this, even choosing, we kind of went, okay, it's going to be surrogacy now. I was, my opinion, these are my words. I was fearful of going to a different country, not knowing the surrogate, not spending time with the surrogate, trusting the surrogate. Of course, these are all my insecurities. And that's, you know, Aoife approached us in 2019. I've got such a close relationship with Aoife, as does Arthur. She lived with us in London for a year. You know, she's not my baby sister. She's the second youngest, but I've always spoiled her. We've a lot in common when it comes to hair, makeup, tans, fashion. We get on so well. And she said, oh, I do it. And I thought, oh God, you're joking. Of course you're not going to, you know, oh God, whatever. And then we were living in America. And, you know, again, I'm on that thing of working, getting on a plane from LA to fly to Ireland to work, to fly to London to work, because we're self-employed, you know. Yeah. The hustle, you still got to do it all. And we just kept putting it off, putting it off. I was on Dancing with the Stars here in Ireland in 2020. That wrapped in March. And I was due to fly back to America. And I couldn't because of COVID.
Lockdown.
Arthur had to leave. We were on the O-1 visa. He had to leave Los Angeles, packed up our house, packed up everything. Because unless you were a citizen or had a green card, you were told to get out. So 2020... we moved back home to my mom and dad's house, the room I had growing up. It was just him and I in there. After being so independent for so many years in London and America, and that was the making of us. And we decided this is what is really important. You know, I'm living in this tiny little room that we had growing up. All our stuff's in storage. My sister was there with her baby, her fiance, and my dad. And I thought, this is what's important. It's family.
Was that Aoife that had her baby and her husband?
That was Tara. Aoife's never had any children. Tara has our baby nephew, Harvey. Aoife was living in Dublin. She moved home. She was in London for years. And after mum passed away, you know, she decided that she needed to be at home as well. So she was in Dublin. We were at home. We didn't really see much of Aoife because obviously the lockdown rules were very, very strict as well. So you kind of had to stay away from everyone. But then in 2020 at Christmas, Aoife was like, I'm definitely interested in doing this for you. And we kind of thought, oh my God, maybe this is something we really need to think about. I said to Arthur, I'm 44 this year. And I said, by the age of 45, I just feel I'm going to be too old. Arthur's 2 years younger than me. And then it was really in 2021, Aoife and I in January, we moved into our new home that we got. Arthur and I have never lived in Ireland together. So this is a first for us because I left Ireland in 1998 and moved back in 2020. And her and I went for a walk and she said, I'm really interested in doing this. I really, really want to help you guys out. I think you've done so much for me, you know. And she said, expressed herself that she may never have any children. She's single. She's 32, you know. So experiencing that whole thing would be an amazing feeling. But then, you know, not having the responsibility. She shares, flat shares in Dublin city centre with, you know, other girls. She's still young, you know. But then we had to make sure that this was right for us. It was kind of right for my family. I've mentioned to my sisters over the years, would they do it? And over the years, they all kind of went, I can't help you. And it was in the 2020, two of my sisters had said, we thought we could help. You know, we have children already. It'd be hard to explain to these kids that are 9 years old, you know, mom's pregnant, the baby's not hers, I'm giving the baby away. So it just kind of, the way it happened, it was so organic. And it was Aoife that initiated these conversations. And that was very reassuring for us, you know. And then you have to get tested. It's not like it's an easy thing. You have to get tested yourselves. You know, Aoife then, of her own accord, wanted to go and see a therapist, you know, to talk about all of this. You know, I don't know what was said because obviously that's private. There's fertility testing you do individually. And especially because surrogacy, there are no regulations here in Ireland. So we didn't know if what we were doing was right, but we kind of knew some of it was wrong. And I would ring up places here in Ireland and ask for advice and they wouldn't be able to advise me.
Yeah. Was that a legal thing or was that more of a fear of
I think it's
not
more of a fear that there's no regulations and they can't be seen to be advising me. And maybe as well, because I have a public platform, they're probably fearful that I'd say, well, you told me this, and there might be repercussions for that. Right. You know, and I think, you know, a lot of people from my community, you know, the LGBTQ plus community, have to go down these routes. And, you know, and I was fearful then of going to a different country where English isn't, you know, the first language. And that's what we had to do. I've never said where we went, and I don't want to say, you know, where we went, but English wasn't the first language. You know, there's just a lot, and there was the egg donor. It's like it's a full on thing, you know.
So this is what I want to unpick and dissect a little bit, because I was just talking to somebody about it and I was like, oh my God, I'm chatting to Brian Downing. I'm so excited. He's just announced he's having a baby via surrogate. And then I was like, his sister's a surrogate. And this person I was chatting to was like, oh my God, this is incredible. And then I was like, but whose sperm is it and whose egg is it? And the person that I was chatting to was like, this is the information we need. Because suddenly I thought, well, it's not. Is it Arthur's? And is it going to be your, obviously it can't be yours and your sister's. So what, talk me through that process.
Yes.
And how did you decide it?
You know, during the, I've never spoken about this. And, you know, there's certain stuff along the process that Arthur and I just will keep private because, of course, that's just, you know, what it is. So we know who, you know, the father is. There was, you know, we'd found out stuff along the way regarding ourselves and individually that we didn't expect to find out. And then, so we, you know, so then we could only one person could be, you know, the biological father of our child. And for Arthur and I, it kind of, it made no difference to us. You know, even I remember the day, you know, you got to give samples. And it's like, when you think back, like, it's like, there's a story. Like, and I remember both of us were like with these little tubes. And I'm like, is this it? Is this what it's come down to?
How do I wank into a tiny pot? Like, how do I do it?
Like, we were offered a room in a clinic. And I went, no, that's so inappropriate because they'll know what we're doing in the room. I went, no. And I remember just doing all of that. And I to be honest with you, I was so emotional about it because I just felt really like, wow, this is what we have to do. And there's no shame in it, but I just felt like I felt a bit of shame attached. And I don't know why that is, because I'm intimate with my husband and that's fine. You know, we have sex, we're married, but this was for a different thing. And I felt really emotional about it. And I still have a picture of the two little empty things we got with the yellow lids. And I just look at it and it was just a very odd feeling for me. And I felt such vulnerability. And then you have to get to the clinic within a certain amount of time. And I was like, Arthur, I'm not handing these in. I am mortified. These are two little cups full of cum. Mortified. I'm mortified here. Like I was, Zoe, I was mortified.
Yes, of course. I get it. I totally get it. It's when you hand over a urine sample when you go to the doctors and you've wrapped it up in a little bit of tissue paper, but it's still warm. And you go to the receptionist and you go, don't touch it. I've done the lid. You know, it's all very weird and fumbling.
And at that time, you know, here, the police stopping people on the road was still a thing with lockdown. You could only go a certain point. And I said, if you get stopped by a police officer, you tell him you have two cups of semen because we are trying to start a motherfucking family. It had to be at a certain temperature, at a certain time. We have no time to play around. And then we'd done all of that. And then all of that, whatever happened after that happened. Yep. And then, you know, we had to find an egg donor because... Okay. You know, my sister is great and she was only ever going to be the surrogate. She was never going to be the biological, you know, mother of our child because I'm from a very big family. I'm one of seven. I have so many nieces and nephews. That dynamic just wouldn't work for us personally. It may work for other people because my fear would always be, you know, EastEnder style. You ain't my mother. Yes, I am.
I was thinking
if I'm chastising my child going, you can't do that. Eve was like, well, actually, that's my child and they can. So no. And then luckily enough, we knew that we could get an egg donor and there was a plethora of choice again regarding that. And again, you know, Arthur and I will, you know, remain private, you know, regarding that whole process, but only to say that, you know, these people are medically, you know, fit and healthy mentally, their parents, their grandparents, you know, so that was obviously important and the testing process. And also, you know, to know the reasoning for do it was also important to Arthur and I, that these women done this because they wanted to. Yeah. That was important as well.
We'll be right back after this short break.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to this episode of Made by Mamas. Now, where were we?
Two of my best friends, they're a gay couple, Lucy and Yvonne, and they actually listen to the podcast, so that's nice. So I'm going to give them a little...
Hi, ladies!
Hi, ladies! They had their baby in Denmark. They go to Denmark to get their sperm, and they're actually in the process of trying to go again now. And they said, what's the really lovely thing about it is that they're using the same sperm donor as the first time, and there's another letter there. You know, he wrote a letter to say, you know, how much he wanted, you know, a couple that were having problems with fertility or slash couldn't do it on their own to actually start a family with his sperm. And it was just this really lovely, beautiful message to the child, to, you know, to their child and to them. And because, you know, we take for granted, I think, that, you know, we just go and have sex and we just hope for the best.
Totally. Okay,
obviously, certain situations don't work out
it's
like that,
trickier,
but sometimes it does. Yeah. And so you've got to go through that whole process and be okay and be comfortable with it.
And may I point out, there are still no guarantees.
No.
You can retrieve 20 eggs, 20 eggs means fuck all, because you may get one viable, two viable embryos. So you can harvest, you know, as many as you like. There are no guarantees that you'll get a, you know, a viable, healthy embryo, which is really, really important. But also when you do your embryo transfer on that day, that may not turn into a pregnancy. It may not turn into a healthy pregnancy. There's no guarantees. We were lucky, you know, when we went, was because we had lost two with an embryo that split into twins, but it wasn't viable. There was an issue with it. So we'd lost that. And even for me with Arthur, I cried that day. I was so sad, because to me, it's not just an egg and sperm. This is an embryo, and they knew the gender. And for me, that was a loss. And I know that sounds really dramatic, but for me, that was a loss. And I was really sad that day. Yeah. And I said to Arthur, we'd one, you know, embryo left, and this embryo was in a freezer for months before anything happened. And I remember thinking to Arthur, just being really sad and just thinking, that's our baby. And they are now by themselves. And then with Aoife, you know, you have to go on hormones. You've got to regulate a cycle. Like, I know my sister's cycle. Like, we had an orange cup she used to pee in, much the same color as your jumper. And I've kept this plastic cup because it means so much to me. If we were doing ovulation tests and when we've done our four pregnancy tests, I have kept this cup. So when I see people, and, you know, it doesn't happen for everyone to get pregnant straight away, but then you see some people who do have children, and we hear horror stories every day, whether it's online or it's on the news, of children that are abused or hurt. And it used to rile me up, because I'm saying to Arthur, you know, at one point we didn't think we were even going to get pregnant this year because we just weren't getting to that point. And we were going to pull the plug. Like, we kind of said, that's it, you know, we're done. We're doing these scans, these ultrasounds. Aoife has been a trooper. Her hormones are regulated, her cycle. You know, she cut out alcohol. She's 32, she's single.
What an incredible woman. What an incredible person. Yeah.
And then by chance, the clinic said, just give it one more go. And we thought, you know what, let's just give it one more go. And then let's just take 6 months out. And then, you know, we measured the uterus, had to get to a certain, you know, for the transfer that was big enough to soak up the embryo. We measured, got on that plane. You got one little embryo left. We have one. And then that turned into, you know, we're due in September, a very, you know, a healthy pregnancy. But also, because, you know, Arthur, my husband, is so positive. I'm realistically positive, because then I just went on Google. And I was saying, embryo transfer, and what can you do? What can't you do? And I worried myself, thinking at some point this might be taken away from us. And remember, we were 6 weeks and 3 days. Arthur was on a shoot, and Aoife and I went for our first scan. And even at then, the lady doing it said to us, there are still no guarantees. You know, your blood test has come back. Your HCG level is super high. The hormones are there. You may not hear a heartbeat. You're 6 weeks and 3 days, but don't panic. And it was an internal scan, which I was so worried about, because I just thought a scan is just a scan, but it's an internal scan. And I was like, will this hurt? Because this is quite a big scan. And they were like, no, I said, will it hurt, Aoife? No, you're going to be fine. And then they put it in, and Aoife and I are holding hands and we're crying, and we hear, wow. And I tell you, I get emotional now. And I tell you, I just stood there and I remember just thinking, oh my God, we have a baby, like, we're pregnant. And it was the strangest feeling of thinking, oh my God, we are the luckiest people in the world. You know, but every time, Zoe, I was so afraid this was going to be taking away from us. Even our scan last week, we seen baby's face, nose, everything, and our consultant was like, you are bang on trend when it comes to the size of your baby's head, you know, the fluid in the sac, baby's mouth was opening, the tongue was coming in and out. And it was almost like, shit, we've done this. This is like, because you, maybe it's because you hear so much, the world,
you hear so many horror stories,
so heavy, it's so heavy, what everything's going on in America, Jesus Christ, what's happening in the Ukraine, what's happening here, I see on the news with children. And you go, oh my God, you know, and it's just, I'm like, now we just need to get baby here. We just need to, and also I worry about Aoife.
I was going to ask you that, actually. How do you feel around, you know, Aoife and her kind of highs and lows and what you need to do? Because you're her big brother.
Yes,
you're
the only brother. 100%. Yeah. I'm the eldest. I have six girls. Yeah. And my family and I are so close. We're like best friends. And my worry for her is that I don't want her to feel she's going to be left out after this, because she is the star of this whole show. You know, when she hid this for 6 months, no one knew, because we wanted to get as far into this as we could.
Well, you hid it from the rest of your family, Brian? Did you not?
My family knew. From day dot, our family were all on. We're so close. You know, there was a bit of conflict initially with them going, I'm just not sure, how does this change the dynamics of our family? You know, because they were fearful. What if Aoife gets attached? What if Aoife goes, ooh, you know, I've changed my mind? You know, because these are all what ifs. We don't know. And everyone's on board. My father, you know, it was just, everything's been perfect. But I just worry about her. I worry that she's okay. I'm putting her in this situation. I knew it was going to get a bit of press attention. That's not me being arrogant. That's just the job that I do. And I knew, we talked about it, there would be an interest. I didn't expect it to be the cover of the papers the way that it has been here. And that's always lovely, don't get me wrong. But it makes me worry about Aoife, because she went for a spray tan and she was fully nude in this spray tan. I don't know why she chose to be nude, but that's her choice. And the girl went, oh my goodness, you're Brian Downing's sister. It's you. You know, and that was odd for Aoife. And she just said to her, what you're doing is amazing, you know, oh my goodness.
As she was spraying her breasts.
Yes, spraying her breasts.
You know,
that are gone super big,
super big,
you know, and her stomach that is growing. And, you know, Aoife was like, well, that's a bit odd, because I didn't want to put her in the firing line, because as much as we're getting amazing feedback and amazing comments, there are people out there that can't abide the fact that two men, you know, who chose to be gay, you know, are forcing this, you know, raping a womb, renting a womb, forcing this woman into a situation. And we've had that from stuff like, well, I hope she doesn't get cancer from the hormones, hope she won't die during childbirth. Just meant you shouldn't be allowed to have a baby. You're disgusting. What we're doing to this child, what we're bringing this child into.
You are joking. That is that is horrendous.
And when we, on the day that we chose to be gay, like how odd is that? We gave up the right to be parents. But, you know, that is based on pure homophobia. That's all that is. Because I know people who've gone down the surrogacy route that are heterosexual people and they don't get it. Aren't they? Isn't it tricky for them? God love them. They want to be parents. Gay men or gay women do it. Everyone has an opinion. It's based on hate and homophobia. That's all that is. And I didn't want Aoife to be part of that. I wanted to protect her. But she made the decision to go public, because I kind of thought, you know, because Aoife's at work. She, you know, she works in a hotel. She's on reception. People notice her growing belly. She's single. You know, people have asked her questions. Mm-hmm. So we came out. And I also worry for her and the dynamics of how this happened on the day of delivery. We don't know what's going to happen. Mm. You know, we hope for a safe delivery, you know, which we hope it will be, God willing. And I always say God willing, and I don't know why. I think it's an Irish thing. My mom used to say that. Because we don't know what's going to happen. All we know is that, you know, Aoife won't hold baby initially when baby's born. Aoife won't breastfeed baby when baby's born. If it won't be soothing baby, baby's going to be looked after by Arthur and I every, you know, 2 or 3 hours when we're feeding. What I do know is Aoife is having the best medical care that she can get. We're going to go see her, of course. And then after a week or two, we think that'll be a nice time. Aoife is going to recuperate for 6 weeks with my sisters and my sister's house. And then, you know, Aoife will come around, she'll hold baby. But I said to Arthur, you know, I said, let's just let her do it in the hospital. Like, we're trying to do this the way we should.
What's the mentality behind that? Has somebody given you that piece of advice, or is that something that you guys have come up
with? No, I just advise in going is, you know, when it comes to surrogacy and what happens is it's best not for the person who's had the surrogate to hold the baby initially, because, you know, there's all these hormones, there's all everything. It's just best to have that bit of separation. And it's very important for Arthur and I to do skin on skin with the baby and not the surrogate. And then Aoife goes into a recovery room. And I said to Arthur at that point, I think we should do skin on skin on the same room that Aoife's recovering in. You know, we've been in this together. I want Aoife, you know, to see her niece, her nephew. You know, she is going to be the most amazing aunt to them. And also, Aoife's going to be in this baby's life. How amazing is that? That we have Aoife as the surrogate who carried our child. You know, I want them to have a unique relationship.
And also, you know, there is DNA that's passed through the placenta. So, you know, yes, that is not her baby. Absolutely. She's done the most incredible thing in the whole entire world for you. But you are all a family together.
All a family.
It's the most incredible gift.
Of course. At Christmases, at Easter, holidays, Aoife's birthday, anything. Aoife, you know, and how amazing when we decide to tell our child what Aoife, you know, your aunt, you know, gifted us this. You know, we wanted you so much. You know, that Aoife, you know, allowed us to do this. And I just think that a lot of the stuff they say you shouldn't do, I think all that goes out the window because our situation is so unique. I don't know anyone, you know, whose sister carried their baby for them. I've read about it in Woman's Own. I've read about it in Closer, you know. So I think our dynamic is, you know, is special for us.
It's a breathtaking story. It makes me, I don't know if you know my story, but my sister went through early menopause and was left infertile. Okay. And I was heading in the same direction, had my two children, and very, very luckily, because they said I would never. And I really, really contemplated carrying a baby for my sister.
Wow.
But she didn't have any. So we had endless conversations about it. And I really at one point thought, I can do this for her. I can do this for her. But she couldn't, there were no eggs left. She was completely infertile. So we were like, at that point, it would be, would it be one of my eggs, that one of my very few eggs left? And then it would be her husband's. But like, it was just all too much. And I just thought, knowing, having carried two of my own babies, I could not go through. I couldn't go through with it.
See, a lot of people don't know this because since Arthur and I really have announced, we've really, this is the first time I've said any of the stuff, you know, that I've said, because we've just not spoken about it. And I think this is a great platform for me to speak about it because this is what, these are the conversations that you ladies have. And I know that there's a lot of love, there'll be a lot of love in the room with this because it's from people who, you know, have families and want to be parents and are parents. And, you know, our story is unique, but we want the exact same thing as anyone else that is guested on this podcast. And that is to be a parent and have a child. And just because we're gay doesn't mean I'm a second class citizen, that I don't get that. I've always had to fight harder, you know, all of my life. My husband's had to fight harder all of his life to dress himself, to get food because he was an immigrant. You know, being gay and being Irish and being Catholic and all anything I've done in television, it's that fight hard. So the fact that we've had to fight harder to have our family, we fight every day. Also, we're in the same industry. You hustle. The hustle is real. That's what it is.
Has Ireland caught up at all? Because I feel like you've got a really exciting space now to really start talking about it. What a unique story. And let's be honest, in terms of where Ireland have been and their views and you know, the history of it and to where they are now, you know, how do you feel about that? And are you going to use your voice for good to kind of bang that drum?
Totally. I mean, especially with the referendum here in 2015, you know, and same-sex marriage. And that was incredible. So I always believe that Ireland is ahead of the time at times. There'll always be, Zoe, no matter what country you go to, whether it's England, America, or Ireland, there'll be certain parts of it that won't be able to stand Arthur and I. You know, that's just life and won't like what we're doing. 90%, I would say, of people are so supportive. Families, when I was growing up, I was born in 78. So when I was growing up in the 80s, the families that we had then are not the families we have now. Families are diverse. You've got biracial members of families. You've got same sex. You've got fostering. You've got adoption. You've got surrogacies. Families need to grow with the time. So I'm just so lucky that we're having a child in 2022. I think Ireland, I think, see, it's tricky because it's just the regulations regarding it. There is change coming. And Arthur and I hope to God that this year, both our names will go on the birth cert. I think there's something happening in July and then again in October that will allow us.
That has to happen.
Yeah, I hope to God it does, because what happens is if it doesn't, it leaves one of us, you know, for 2 years not really having, you know, a say. And then you apply for guardianship and you've guardianship for 16 years because when a child, you know, turns 18, they're an adult. Now, what's very lucky and unique for us is the fact when we got married in 2015, I changed my name to match Arthur's name because I wanted us to have a family. And this is in 2015. So I'm Brian Dowling Gourignon on my passport. Arthur is Arthur Gourignon. My sister Aoife is Dowling. In the eyes of the law here in Ireland, Aoife is considered the biological mother of our child, which she is not. But in the eyes of the law, so our child will be Dowling Gurignon, the exact same name as me and the Gurignon as Arthur. So from that point of view, I'm very, very lucky that we all have the same name. Regardless. Because you hear horror stories of people going, well, you're stopped at the airport and if you're not the biological father, you have to have a letter, permission. And I said to Arthur, whoever it worked out for us, it would take someone quite strong to stop any of us at an airport and ask me, you know, if me and my child had different, you know, say surnames or whatever letter. And I'm going, are you feeding this child every 3 hours? Have you looked after this child? Do you love... Because that gets me really. I traveled with my nieces in 2018. It was Sophie and Sive, and I'm obviously their uncle. And I got stopped coming back in from Dublin. And the girl was like, these aren't your kids. I said, no, I'm their uncle. Have you got a letter? I said, a letter from who? For what? And that's the thing.
Yeah, I have to travel. When we travel to a certain country, because I've got different surnames to my kids. You know, they're Doran Joneses and I'm a Hardman. I just haven't changed my name.
Well, here
so
we
I had
go.
To take I had to take the birth certificate with me because I thought they're going to stop me and ask me and I had to show it.
Did it annoy you?
Oh, I was furious. I mean, I get riled by so many things around parenting because I think some of it is just so shady
and stupid.
And judgmental and stupid, exactly.
It's almost like you have to have a biological blood, like you have to have the blood as your child or else you can't be a real parent. It's absolute bullshit. I would take, you know, my friend's children, I take a bullet for them. I love them that much. You know, when you adopt a child or you foster a child, there's no biological connection, but you love that child. You can adopt a child and biologically have your children and love them both the exact same. People are obsessed with that. And even with Arthur and I, you know, people aren't afraid to ask, well, who is the father? We're both the father. But who is? You know, and I think that's Arthur and I. That's up to us to decide because our son or daughter is going to call us both dad.
Are you going to both be dad or is one going to be daddy, one going to be...
Well, listen, jokingly, I dated a guy who I had to call daddy. He was really into it. So I said, no one's calling me daddy. No, no, no. So I'm thinking dad... You know, and then Arthur speaks French, Russian, Armenian, Italian, and English. So he said something pear in French or something in Russian. But listen, we'll let the child call that and see how that pans out, I think. Yeah. But I don't want to call daddy. I'm like, no.
No way. No. That was saved for a one-time thing only and it's left a scar forever.
More than one time. Thank you for thinking that. Yeah.
We like at this point in the show to talk about the best piece of advice that you've been given since you found out that you were going to be a father.
I said earlier that, you know, sadly, I lost our mom in 2018. And, you know, none of us were planned. Before mom passed away, mom wasn't sick. She passed of sudden adult death syndrome. So she went to sleep. You know, she didn't wake up at 61. God. And, you know, before mom passed away, we had these really kind of, you know, poignant conversations without fully realizing she was going to die the following week. Because she wasn't sick. And I said to her about, you know, family and stuff. And we didn't have much money growing up, super working class in Rathangan. My father worked full time. My father left when it was dark, came home when it was dark. And my mom was a full time housewife looking after seven children. None of us were planned. None of us were planned. And my mom would always say to me, all children are loved and wanted, even the ones that you don't plan for. And she said that all you need, and this advice was, all you need is to love a child. And once you love a child, you'll be so accepting of everything about them. And I didn't understand what she meant. And of course, now I know because she'd seven different children, seven different personalities, seven different desires, you know, tantrums, dislikes. And once you love that child, you know everything is going to be okay. And I asked her why she didn't have any more. She Tara at 35. And she said they were never blessed again. So so she's seen us all as blessings, you know, and we're not kind of back to back. She was never blessed again. Mm. And I thought, my goodness, like sometimes my mom wouldn't eat so we could eat. Mom would always have a small portion of food. And I never knew why that was. And she always sat down last. That's because she wanted us to eat instead of her. And she said she was never blessed again. And I thought, how lovely was that? She's seen us all as blessings. But the advice was love. Once you love your child, everything else, you don't need all that. You need a warm bed, of course. You need food. You know, you need your warm clothes, but you need love.
And you need love, yeah.
But that's it. Because once you love your child, you're content. They're content. Because no matter what they throw at you, you love them and they're going to be accepted. And listen, we don't know how this journey is going to go for us. No one does when you're a parent and you have a child. You do not know how they are going to turn out. But I think once you love them, and I think that's the advice for anyone, I would say, and I think you'll agree as a parent, you're a mother, you know,
yeah.
It has to be love, right?
Oh, of course. And I've got a stepdaughter, Isla, who's not my biological daughter, but I've raised her since she, you know, I've helped raise her since she was 15 or 16 months old. And she's just as much my daughter, and how much I love her ferociously, like the other two. She feels like she's a part of me. She has the most incredible mum and an amazing father. But I am also her parent. I'm really proud of that. And actually, lots of people say to me, oh, well, you know, you've only birthed two and you've only got two. And I'm like, I've got three kids. I have three children.
You said that at the start. You actually said you had three children.
I have three children. Yes. Yeah, because that's, you know, I'm not trying to take the place of her mum, but I also love them exactly the same, because it's all I've ever known. She taught me how to be a mother, you know? So it's like going back to your point, it's like when you love a child like that, that relationship that you get back is completely unique, regardless of other circumstances or setups or situations. I agree with you totally.
It's like when people say, how else could you get up every 2 or 3 hours? Yeah. How else could you do everything, okay, and not do it for love or for the greater good? Because everyone tells me these horror stories. Like every day on Instagram, well, you won't be going out when the baby's here. You won't be having that treatment. But I'm like, yes, I will. Because I think our child is going to adapt to our life. Put your sunnies on. Get that little juicy outfit on. Let's get out there. Let's go. Because that's what we're all about.
It only gets better because you've got another person to come along, you know, for the ride with you. And that's what we say, you know. It just, we go to barbecues. We take the kids. If it's 10 o'clock at night, we put them asleep in a bed. And then we put them in the car and we go home. Or we all stay there. Like, we
I'm
get
all
on
here
with
for
it
this.
Yeah.
My mom said, once a baby's tired, let them sleep.
Yeah.
Has to go with you.
So at this point in the podcast, we also ask our guests about products. But seeing as Babe's not with us yet, I'm going to wait because I'm going to get you back on because it's been such a wonderful chat. And you can tell us what you're using then.
I nearly said the gender. I nearly went,
oh my God, you know the gender.
We know. And I've never said that to anyone yet. We know. We have our
moment.
Name. We have
Now's
our name. I was about to say,
don't say
they
it.
Aren't we'll here yet.
Surprise. They're not here yet. Okay, we'll wait. We can't wait. And listen, good luck with it all. It's been so lovely chatting to you. We're also thrilled about the baby coming.
It's quite nice to, it's been therapeutic because normally you talk about so much other stuff, you know, which is work and la la la. This has been quite nice because I am going to be a parent. And when I say it, I kind of go, I'm actually ready.
Yeah.
Like you're never really ready, but we wouldn't have gone down this route we've went down unless it was a maybe. Do you know what I mean? We wouldn't have went to this. We're so ready. And I can't wait for the sleepless nights. I can't wait for these dreadful nappies you hear about. I can't wait for any of it because it's what it's all about. And we're just so lucky that we can do it. And thank you for, you know, allowing me to come on here and talk to you. It's been quite therapeutic, actually, just talking about it.
Well, I've loved it. I could sit and listen to you all day, and I know that people listening will agree. Brian, you're an absolute treasure. Good luck with it all. Let us know how the labour goes. We can't wait to catch up with you afterwards.
Thank you, Zoe.
Loads of love.
Bye, darling.
Oh, I really, really hope that you enjoyed that conversation. For me, it was one of my favourites because I'm always really interested in a different kind of setup to my own. Obviously, we have had discussions around adoption and surrogacy and fertility issues before, but, you know, to have somebody like Brian come on who's so articulate and who can kind of tell us exactly how it is and what he went through to becoming a dad, it's fascinating stuff. Also to Aoife, his sister, for being such a brave and wonderful human being to do that for her brother. I just thought the whole chat was amazing. So really hope you enjoyed it. Georgia is going to be back at some point when she stopped drinking pina coladas and having a really nice time on holiday. I'm not jealous at all. So have a brilliant week. As always, we would love you to rate, review, subscribe and give the podcast a little follow. And as always, if you do have time to kind of send us your suggestions for guests, you can always drop me a DM on @madebymum. Or you can message me on my own Instagram, which is @ZoeHardman, and we will see you on Friday. Made by Mamas is an Insanity podcast production, and today's episode was produced by the wonderful Charlotte Mason.
Insanity Group.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.